All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Crypto 101 podcast. I am your co-host, Bryce, as always, joined by my good buddy across the good old country of ours, Brendan. How you doing, man?
You know, I'm doing good. Here we are, 2025, another year in crypto has gone by. And man, I'm excited. In today's podcast, we get to talk about two topics that we really like over here. And that is the DeFi space. We're excited to be able to present a whole lot of new information from an expert in the industries.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I am so excited to introduce our guest for the day, Sam McPherson, who is the CEO at Phoenix Labs, as well as a contributor to Spark. Sam, how are you doing? And Happy New Year.
I'm doing great. Happy New Year. It's good to be here.
Yeah, we're really excited to kind of kick off the new year with really some, you know, discussion about a protocol that we're really excited about, which is the Sky protocol and everything you're working on at Phoenix Labs. Sky, formerly known as Maker. We'll get into all that. But Sam, real quick, let's just get acquainted with our audience here at Crypto 101. Tell us a little bit about you and your background and what got you building a company in the crypto space.
Yeah, so I've been involved with Maker for quite a while now. I joined in first in, I came into crypto in the 2017 bull cycle, hobbyist investor. I was working on video games at the time. Then I switched full time into crypto, specifically working on Maker, right around when the DAO was taking control from the Maker Foundation. This was about May of 2021. So I joined the core engineering team there, and this was operating under the DAO. So I worked there for 2 years, you know, building out the protocol, securing it, all these kinds of things. And about 2 years later, 1 year later, 2022, during the bear market, the endgame proposal was made. And this was to restructure MakerDAO into sub-DAOs, which are called STARS. And so the reasoning behind this was that as one of the first DAOs, there were a lot of learnings. And so not everything worked perfectly. Having a very flat structure, there were lots of issues with this in governance, you know, political issues, it wasn't working quite as well as it could have. So the proposal for the end game was made in 2022 to simplify the core protocol. There was a rebrand involved with this as well, but the governance restructuring was also part of this. So the protocol gets simplified into doing wholesale lending out to the sub-DAOs or STARS. And then so my team that I formed in May of 2023, that we launched a Spark sub-DAO. This is the first sub-DAO. This is a more user-facing arm of the now Sky protocol, previously Maker protocol. Sorry, there's a lot of terms. and we can go over all this in more detail if you want. Our job with Spark is to be able to, so we have a lending market called Spark Lend, but now more increasingly we're doing lending to other protocols such as Aave, Morpho, and stuff like that. And my company, Phoenix Labs, is a smart contract development, development shop in general. So we work on front-end websites as well as the smart contracts.
Awesome. And so when you kind of think about what was the main draw factor or really the main pull factor into crypto, into building DeFi, kind of where do you come at it from? Are you kind of from the school of thought that, you know, we're going to replace the entire banking industry and that's kind of why you're building these tools and resources? Or are you just trying to maybe attack it from a different mindset?
No, absolutely. I'm a big believer that we're... I don't even think it's a question of if, but when we're going to move the entire traditional finance on chain. And the reason is because there's just like the economics behind it. Like things are just much more capital efficient when they move on chain. The whole traditional finance industry, like some of it even operates on like spreadsheets. It's just ancient technology. And so the amount of waste that comes with that means that the more capital efficient solution, I have no doubt in my mind that it's going to win out in the long run.
And just before we get too in the weeds of everything you're doing at Phoenix Labs, do you view the world as kind of moving into like multi-chain, but mostly built on public blockchains, or, you know, and having the Solanas of the world and interoperable with all the EVM kind of things? Or do you kind of view most of the capital going, getting siphoned into, you know, these permissioned JP Morgan chains and, you know, I don't know, any future sort of State Street chain or whatever? Do you think the public blockchains will win out in the long run?
I think all of these things will exist and there's use cases for all of them. But I do think that the public blockchains have already proven out that they're a much better central hub for assets. We see this, like still most of the TVL is on like Ethereum. You know, Solana is starting to gain some traction. So I do think there's going to be multiple chains, public chains as well as private chains, and they'll all have their niche. And, you know, whether there's like one major chain, two, you know, that remains to be seen. But it probably will be something like a power law distribution, where there's like one or a couple big ones, and then this long tail which serves different niches.
At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So Spark is essentially the first of the sub-DAOs. And just to clarify all the terms for everyone, we have MakerDAO, which is now Sky. We have sub-DAOs, which are now being referred to as Stars. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And Spark is essentially the first of what could be just a series of Stars, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Awesome. And so, you know, man, you guys are off to a strong start. I was looking the other day and I saw that you injected about $100 million in stablecoin liquidity over to the Base ecosystem. And now the USDS, which is, you know, your native stablecoin, is now over $1.2 billion in market cap. So it sounds like things are heating up quite fast.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, yeah, we're very excited about this development that we've just started rolling out as of November. Which is called the Spark Liquidity Layer. So this is the generalization of what we've been doing in the past. So our first product that we launched was Spark Lend, which is a lending market. And so the way, and that's now the number two lending market by TVL. And it reached that position very quickly, precisely because of the relationship with Sky. And so Sky is able to, via Spark, is able to inject DAI liquidity, now USDS, into the lending market. And this is a way for users to get access to huge amounts of capital right off the bat. So like you turbocharge the growth cycle. So the Spark liquidity layer is the generalization of this and also making it multi-chain. So with the initial launch on Base, we're basically going to be everywhere. We have initial support on Solana through Sky's programs, but Spark is a sort of really doing this liquidity injection turbocharging thing. And Base is just the first of, we'll be supporting all major chains. So this 100 million stablecoin injection, again, like these numbers, we can just ramp it up to like, you know, 100 million, a billion. Like it's very quick because of our size. And so now users are able to access the first product on Base. They're able to get the savings rate on USDS. This is our flagship product where users can enjoy, which is currently 12.5% APY. This is a very scalable APY. So you can deposit 10 million in there, 50 million on Base, and the APY is still 12.5%. It does change, but through a more slower governance process. Mm-hmm. But This is the most scalable yield in DeFi, and we get it from a wide variety of sources. And so this is what we've got live now, but we're hitting the ground running. And so like this year is going to be jam-packed with more launches.
Yeah. And just to kind of follow on with the yield stuff, because that's super interesting. I mean, you know, 12%. And I think if you go to a bank and you lock it up for 6 months right now, maybe you get 4 or 5%, somewhere in that. So where does the yield come from? It's kind of that age old question. Are you going out and looking for deals and lending, you know, user money to places, you know, manually? Is there some sort of algorithmic process that happens where MakerDAO is kind of doing some kind of credit underwriting and lending large swaths of money to businesses or to lending pools? Where does kind of that yield come from in general? And I know it's probably many sources. You don't need to go too in the weeds, but at a high level.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, this is this is the next question you ask, right? You know, great yield. Where's it come from? You know, we should be very skeptical about this kind of stuff. So there is a number of sources, but I'll go over the major ones and maybe historically how Maker has sourced its yield. So the original yield source was over-collateralized crypto lending, and that still remains the flagship yield source today. This is people, you know, average users who want to get some leverage on ETH or Bitcoin. This is usually the use case. And so what they'll do is they'll lock up their ETH and then they can mint DAI, now USDS, against their collateral and then buy more collateral. And that's how they get leverage. So this is by far the dominant use case. And during this yield is not always high during bear cycles. It actually in 2022, it dropped pretty close to zero. So it's not always the highest yield source. But as of right now, it's a very high yield source because we're in a bull market. So this was the historic yield source for Maker primarily. But more recently, 2022, with the rising interest rates, we saw a huge growth in real world assets, in particular tokenized treasury bills. And in a high interest rate environment, this provides a floor on the interest you can provide to users. So once the interest rates from the Fed go up to, you know, 4 or 5%, if the DeFi rates start dropping below that, then you want to change the investment into treasury bills. And so this is the two main yield sources that have been historic. More recently, last year, with the launch of Athena, we were able to get access to the basis trade, which is, this is like a common trading strategy where someone will hold spot ETH or, you know, wrap staked ETH if they want the yield on top of it. And then they'll have a hedge position that's short. And so this is a delta neutral position. You're able to extract a good yield. Fundamentally, what the users are doing on these perps exchanges is that they're also going leverage long on crypto assets. But on centralized exchanges, the scale is just much larger. And these users are paying a large amount. So for whatever reason, sometimes these users have been paying 60% to borrow or to go long or on these crypto assets. And so via Athena, Spark has been able to tap into that yield as well. And that's been fairly significant returns. And so it's able to combine all these yield sources, readjust them automatically. And with the Spark liquidity layer, so previously this was done during with a manual process. The Spark liquidity layer is the transition where this whole thing will be transparent, automated, and open to everybody. So it's not a bank, but you can think of it similar to a bank where you can see the entire balance sheet, all the assets that are in complete real time, and then know the rules of allocation so that you can feel confident that this 12.5% is coming from relatively safe sources. Now, on top of this, what Spark and Sky can provide is insurance. So keeping USDS holders at the very end of a senior position in all these layers of insurance is a very important thing, because as a stablecoin, liquidity and confidence in the system is the most important thing to optimize for. So Sky maintains a 25% cash reserve target in USDC to ensure that people can always enter and exit whenever they want. So in absolute terms, maybe it's not always the highest yield, but it is the most liquid and risk adjusted. It is the best yield in DeFi.
Yeah, and that's super important. It, I mean, having stable yield, but having secure yield, and I like kind of that junior tranche, senior tranche kind of, you know, structuring to the sort of, I don't know, to the capital that you guys are all working with. And so it sounds really cool, and it sounds like you guys took a lot of learnings from, you know, other platforms in the past that have offered yield, that have failed, and so on and so forth. And so, and also MakerDAO as a protocol, or Sky, let's call it, has been around since, I think, what, 2014 or so. I mean, they've been really, they've got some Lindy effect, I would say. And so, and still only, I think, the Sky token and Sky plus Maker market cap, I think, is only around $1 billion or $1.5 billion. So, to me, you know, not financial advice, but when you have this much, you know, total value locked and this much staying power and this much, you know, excitement in a protocol, and it's only $1 billion and it has the total sort of, addressable market of like, you know, trillions, it just seems like such a lopsided asymmetric bet. So full disclosure, I'm long, Maker and Sky tokens, and I have been for a long time. But it just seems like it's got a really good thing going, a lot of smart people, but, I get this question a lot, from just people. They say, hey, like, I'm looking at Maker, I'm looking at Aave, I'm looking at, you know, Liquidy, I'm looking at Frax. There's all these different lending facilities, if you will, Compound. How do you kind of like differentiate them? And like, maybe you could talk about from a high level, like, I differentiate them, like, you know, the way that they lend money and earn yield and all that stuff, but also like the valuation, like why are they all valued so differently? And is that maybe just like speculative markets? But we'd kind of love to hear your riff on like differentiating between some of the lending facilities.
Yeah. I mean, there are some like subtle differences, but largely a lot of the products are similar. You know, they're lending out usually US dollars, and then they're getting a return on that and they're forwarding it to the users who deposit into their protocol. What the main differentiating factors are, size. USDS is, you know, about the largest right now. We're about the same size as USD at the moment. And then collateral composition. So like all lending, you know, it's important to have a robust and diverse marketplace so users are empowered to put their capital where they think they can get the best risk-adjusted yield, as well as other factors that, like, you know, lockup duration, this kind of stuff. But then, like, evaluating where those dollars are going is incredibly important, and it is a big differentiator. So right now, primarily the loans are issued, as I mentioned before, for people going leverage long on crypto. Usually, mainly ETH and Bitcoin, and then in centralized exchanges as well through perps. But this is like, you know, we're just at the beginning of like this huge orders of magnitude increase in market size as TradFi continues to get moved on chain. So the amount of asset classes is fairly small. Like we have the first RWA, which is US dollars. We now have T-bills. And then crypto assets, but that's like three things. So we don't have any equities. We like, you know, corporate debt. Like there's many, many different types of commodities. There's many different types of assets. And it's going to be a slow process. I know there's attempts to getting these on chain. But it's just, it's an ongoing process where you need to move people in bits at a time, wait for the regulation to catch up, this kind of stuff. But I'm confident we'll get there. And once that happens, then like, there's all kinds of different ways protocols can be differentiated by the collateral composition that they keep. And so that's going to be a huge differentiator. On our end, we think beyond our size, our biggest strength is we are at the forefront of automating the entire balance sheet. And so we want to change the status quo of the traditional finance system where, you know, opaque bank ledgers and, you know, corrupt ratings agencies, stuff like that, led to the global financial crisis of 2008. And so we have Bitcoin as this first case of like sort of a hedge against this system, but we also want to improve on it. So as we move these systems on chain, we want to do them better. So no more opaque balance sheets. Everything is auditable. The entire loan supply chain should be entirely on chain and auditable in real time so that we get no surprises about where the where this money is going to and people can make informed choices.
You know, when we look at, you know, I guess how all this stuff is happening, I think the next part has to do with the actual SBK token, because USDS is live, it's going, it's had a really successful launch so far, as we've talked about. And the question that we've gotten from the community, because people are excited about this, is when are we going to get the release of the SBK token? And, you know, is that something that we can hopefully see this year?
When token? When moon?
Soon, TM.
We had to ask.
I mean, we're excited for it. And I guess when it does come out, we're going to have you back on here so we can talk more about it. But, you know, can you share it all? Again, we don't want to get you in trouble, but can you share it all about like the role that the SBK token would contribute to the ecosystem as opposed to the USDS token?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, these are two entirely different types of tokens. So USDS is dollars. So this is can be your savings, your cash, you know, that's the use case there. And for Spark, there'll be governance. And so governing the Spark DAO, where to invest capital, stuff like that, that will be one utility. There'll also be staking so that you'll be able to stake the token and earn an extra yield. What the details of that are TBD. We'll be coming out with that fairly soon.
Awesome. Okay.
And then, was there any timetable, for SPK?
Soon, TM.
Dang it. I can't get anything.
Nice try.
He's a tough nut to crack. Tried to pull a quick one. Okay. No worries. Well, I got a question about MEV. Does that come to bear on any part of the stack for you guys? Is that something you think about of maximal extractable value or minor extractable value, kind of where users get a little ripped off by sandwich attacks and front running? It's a big issue on Solana, but I'm not sure if that comes to bear on sort of your system.
Yeah, I mean, this is a great question. So like MEV is that there's two main parts of DeFi. There's the lending side and the DEX side. MEV is a much, much stronger piece on the DEX side. And these two camps are like, they have very different like technical and user profile. So like DEXs, people are trading quite frequently. They're subject to MEV, this kind of stuff. And it's like, it's most of the gas usage on any chain is going towards DEXs. Whereas lending, I mean, if you think about it as a user, you're not taking out a loan like multiple times a day usually. Like you'll take out a loan and go away for a month and then, you know, maybe do an adjustment after a month. So it doesn't use much gas. There's no MEV opportunity on the loan itself. Where MEV does come into play a little bit is with liquidations. Although we don't really see large liquidations anymore. So the people who are taking loans are much, much better than they used to be back in the day. I remember like 2022, 2021 when there's large crashes. Like one of the bigger ones, I think January 2022, we had like a $60 million liquidation on Maker. And this guy had a $600 million position open. So this was like getting throttled. So that was one of the bigger liquidations I've seen.
Wow.
Anyways, with the context of MEV, to do a liquidation, you require somebody to take the collateral, sell it through a market somehow, and then repay the loan to recollateralize the system. And so that... you can do that by having capital on hand, but more often we see people using what's called flash loans to do this all without requiring any capital on hand to do this. With the smaller sizes, they can use lean on DEX liquidity. So there's an MEV element in there in that we have to set fairly conservative penalties on the users in order to ensure that the protocol is safe, such that we can be very, very confident that we'll be able to liquidate this position. The downside is that for the users getting liquidated, you know, this is already a very unpleasant experience. We don't want to make it any worse. So, you know, by improving on these numbers, you can reduce the amount of penalty that goes into the user so they can get more of their capital back in the end. And it's been very interesting to see some of the solutions coming online. I see Oracle solutions that are taking MEV into account. You know, Chainlink, I think Uma does this. So this is something we're interested in looking at.
I love it. And if we kind of zoom in here on Phoenix Labs, what is the pipeline look like for what projects you're taking on? How do you kind of determine, you know, where you're working? You know, what are some of the main, you know, implementations you're undertaking right now?
Yeah. So as Phoenix Labs, like we're focused on Spark. So, Spark is our primary client. And there's a lot of work to do. We're just operating at warp 10 right now, getting the Spark liquidity layer out is the top priority for us. And what we're aiming to solve here is a big problem with DeFi historically, even now, is liquidity fragmentation. So if somebody spins up a new lending market with some new innovation, that's awesome. The users like it. They want to use it to borrow it, but they need capital providers to come in and seed liquidity into it. With the Spark liquidity layer, we can have Spark do this on behalf of the protocol. So it can leverage the $5.8 billion balance sheet of Sky to then just programmatically inject liquidity at, you know, hundreds of millions in size right away. And then once this liquidity is deployed across DeFi and, you know, all your favorite lending protocols, Aave, Morpho, et cetera, then it will automatically rebalance every block so that if somebody borrows on Aave, even on another chain, base, the liquidity will automatically rebalance, maybe pulling some more from mainnet, such that the interest rates for users are roughly the same. Of course, there's differences based on the collateral composition, but if the collateral is fairly safe, then the interest rates should be largely the same. So as a user, previously you might have to hunt around, and this has been a bit of a hindrance with L2 adoption, is that you have to hunt around to find a lending market that has sufficient liquidity if you want to borrow $10 million. Borrowing $10 million on any L2 right now is going to make the borrow rates skyrocket. And so you're kind of sitting around waiting, oh, when's the liquidity going to come back? Maybe eventually it will come, but maybe it takes an hour, maybe it takes a day. Like, who knows? So with the Spark liquidity layer, if the protocol is hooked up to this, you have knowledge that this will arrive within the finality of Ethereum. So about 20 minutes.
Wow. And you're able to kind of facilitate those large loans. I mean, because that's one of the critiques that I've heard from, like, when I'll go out to conferences and I'll speak with, you know, big hedge fund guys or big institutional guys, like, yeah, like the whole DeFi stuff is cool, but I mean, it doesn't work for, like, you know, large institutions yet or large size. And you gave the example of $10 million and, you know, you won't even be able to get like a loan manager for, like, you know, an investment bank, you know, really, really large, you know, off the couch for, you know, a couple million dollars. They move in large size. And so would you say that the Spark protocol has a plan to get to that stage where it could, you know, facilitate billions of dollars of loans in a single day? And what would it take to get there?
Absolutely. So like where we're at right now, Spark, Sky as a whole is about the size. DeFi is, you know, tens of billions of dollars. It's about that size. And Spark can facilitate this because of Sky's size, the $5.8 billion in total deposits. But there will reach a point where we hit capacity. And so the space as a whole is actually we're not quite fully capital constrained, but as the bull market progresses, capital constraints become a huge issue. This is why you see like huge interest rates for leverage as bull markets are raging. So for the industry as a whole, we need to source new capital. And where do we go for this? It's TradFi. So this is something we're actively pursuing, looking at SUSDS as ETF product. You're getting more institutional players involved from TradFi, because we believe we have a very compelling product, which is people see these high yields, they want access to them. And we think Maker's been around for almost 10 years, 8 years. It's been around for a while. And running these crypto over collateralized loans on chain, there's been almost no defaults on any of them. So this is tried and true. It's one of the safest ways to get access to this crypto mania that's going on. And we believe that traditional players are taking notice of this, and we want to give them access.
Yeah, it's exciting. You know, when it comes to Phoenix Labs, I think the cool part about it is that you all are, you know, quite versatile in what you have the potential to do. You know, you all are a research and development company that specializes in these smart contracts and development, especially when it comes to DeFi. So do you think that Phoenix Labs could potentially work with other stars down the road? And, you know, what will these potential stars look to accomplish?
Yeah, we definitely will. So the dynamic that maybe I'll describe the dynamic a little bit. So we have Sky Core, which is the core protocol, which does mm-hmm. wholesale lending to each of the stars. So these stars, these stars are basically, you can like they'll be run however the community chooses. So they can go off in all kinds of different directions to within wow. the constraints that Sky Core protocol dictates for safety reasons for the protocol as a whole. So the idea is that this system is decentralized on the whole because these stars are going to compete with each other to a certain degree. You can throw your eggs in with one basket in one or like multiple or whatever. But like any competitive market, there is like a collaborative competitive dynamic that yeah. always emerges. It doesn't make sense. You know, we're not in a zero-sum environment. We're at the nascent stage of what's going to be a huge industry. So
yeah.
It makes sense to be more collaborative at this stage and have a positive mindset because we'll all grow the pie together. So I think you could just look at it like the free market at large. There is this other mechanism that everything is anchored on Sky. So there's positive feedback loops where maybe every star isn't successful. Probably a lot of them are just going to blow up and do a terrible job, right? Just like the free market. Mm-hmm. But we want the ones that like hit that, you know, 100x of growth and innovation to then feed back to the core system. And then this system can then seed and subsidize new stars to form and then compete in this marketplace. So this like synergistic feedback system is how the end game is designed to grow the whole protocol.
Do you have any ideas for potential stars that could form here in the next couple of years that you're like, man, this would be a really good idea. This would help the ecosystem, or this would help contribution, or, you know, this is possible now through the Sky kind of migration and upgrade that maybe weren't previously possible before.
Yeah, I mean, there's the sky's the limit, maybe a little bit of a pun, but I think eventually it's going to be covering lots of different niches. The model is designed to really scale up to very, very large size. Spark is the first, and we're very focused on-chain, this automated on-chain aspect. My team is tooled up for smart contract development. But, you know, when you're getting more into like TradFi, stuff like that, that's more like lawyers and, you know, these types of positions. So another team specializing in that may be better for like a more traditional finance focused sub-DAO. But there could be one like even entirely focused on gaming, for example. It's really all about what the community wants to do. But the superpower of the sub-DAO is always this this access to this wholesale credit from Sky. So everybody gets the same deal. So everybody can compete and deploy this capital into get the best risk-adjusted return for the protocol.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, it's a cool idea to say that there could be other niches, you know, even outside of potentially DeFi, like you mentioned, because, you know, historically Sky, which was previously Maker, was really zoned in on dominating the area of DeFi, and they did a really, really good job of it. But now what it seems like there's the idea, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but there's the potential to expand even beyond that into other verticals, into other niches.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely, like, as I said before, I think the industry is so small right now. So, like, mm-hmm. I don't even know what it's going to look like in even 5 years. Like, it's going to be entirely, like, alien to what we know now. And so...
Which is exciting.
Yeah, it's like, it seems like a futile effort to even iterate what I think is potential new
Well, what about categories. Here's one for the near term in terms of, I don't know, if you want to go forecasty or anything. But, like, what do you kind of think of what the regulatory changes that might come here in the States will look like for DeFi. And again, if you want to pass because you're not a legal kind of guy, like I get that. But like, you know, I know that a lot of the applications for Sky, for instance, like you can't use them in the United States because they have, you know, lending and yield. And this is all something that Gary Gensler has really tried to, you know, excommunicate pretty much in the Biden administration, make sure it's not available in the United States. But now we have like Trump and Paul Atkins and like all these guys, you know, Paul Besant or Scott Besant, like, you know, who are running now the U.S. government. Like Trump has WorldFi Liberty, like some, you know, DeFi protocol. Like I think there is a very short future in which regulations get overhauled and products like Sky or Maker, Spark, you know, all this stuff will be accessible by Americans. It just would make sense for that to happen within the next year or two. Do you guys see the ball breaking that way? Or are you just saying, you know, put your hands up in the air and we'll just wait till that cross the bridge when it comes to it?
No, I've been like very, like personally, I've been very heartened by what I've seen in the US. To me, it's like that old adage is like, first they stop you or and then they fight you. And well, I forget exactly what it is.
But yeah, yeah. First like they ignore you. Yeah. Then they laugh at you, then they fight you, then you win.
So it feels like we just passed the then they fight you phase.
Yep.
And now we're at the then they win. Because politically, being anti-crypto seems like a losing position to be in. And I think that's just been proven out over the American election in particular. So, yeah, very optimistic about getting some regulatory clarity. This is all we've ever wanted. Just what are the rules of the road? Give them to us so we can follow them and, you know, build a better society.
And I'm pretty optimistic that things are going to move pretty quickly. I saw an interview with the incoming CEO for Charles Schwab, and he said, he goes, yeah, I feel really silly for not having bought crypto. And, you know, our clients are asking us for direct exposure. And so we're probably going to get in the game as soon as the regulatory landscape changes, which I foresee happening in short order. I'm kind of summarizing there, but that short order regulatory change was something that he saw. So I'm like, you know, it could come, you know, a lot quicker than, you know, with some executive actions or like, you know, a very cohesive Congress that could get stuff through. And then if you think about the implications for crypto, when you have now not only just these tokens that are being tradable that are, you know, quote unquote, valueless governance tokens that are trading on, you know, Coinbase or Kraken, but then you could actually have these applications. It brings so much more reality to these tokens. And then you have, you know, people actually being able to earn yield here in America. Like it's going to go from, you know, whatever the what is the market cap of crypto today? Call it $3 trillion to $30 trillion. It would like these are the capital markets that the world is, you know, wants to access. And it's going to be great for the U.S. economy. It's going to be great for the crypto economy. I think it's going to have wealth effects all over the world. And I think it's going to happen. I think we're going to open up the floodgates. There's going to be a whole new universe of participants. It's going to be the American consumer finally, which I think is kind of the holy grail. But do you kind of see that, you know, the total value of the market increasing, like if, you know, Americans could actually use Spark, for instance?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the industry has been growing despite the previous, I guess the current, soon to be previous administration trying to stamp it out with things like Operation Choke Point 2.0. So stablecoins have just been up and to the right, even in these conditions. I think stablecoins are going to be one of the biggest growth sectors in the next couple of years. Like we're talking like order of magnitude increasing in size, precisely because we can get this, like get people what they want, which is they want access to these yields. So we've had success with the ETFs of Bitcoin, ETH. That was great. But we still don't have any stablecoin ETFs. And I think that would be, that just seems like the next logical thing to give people access to.
Mm. Wow. Well, yeah. There's a lot.
There is a lot. And the good news here, gentlemen, is that, you know, at the time of recording this, it's January 7th. which means that there's less than 2 weeks left of Gary Gensler over the SEC, and then he's booted out. I know. Hopefully we can add in some cheering noises or something, but
yeah, that's for the editor.
the future really is looking bright, and there's all these positive potential catalysts that we're looking towards. And, you know, we all thought crypto was going to be explosive without a lot of these catalysts. And I think once you start adding them in, the sky, pun intended there, really is the limit. So hold off on any more puns. But, you know, we got one final question for you, Sam. You know, outside of anything that you're working on, what do you think that 2025 holds in store for crypto? And what will be those like big themes maybe outside of DeFi?
No, outside of crypto?
Outside of DeFi.
Okay.
Yeah, what other themes interest you outside of anything maybe you're directly working on?
Oh, this is an interesting question. I mean, my head is in DeFi all the time. So. Outside of DeFi. Like, I guess there's a lot of interesting technologies. AI, I mean, I think is the obvious answer.
Yeah.
That's just continuing to blow me away. Like, it's like this thing where, you know, you get used to stuff as it trickles out, but then you like look back 1 year, like, you know, videos mm-hmm. that looked like that were being generated by AI that looked terrible 1 year ago, and now they're like almost, you can't tell. So like
totally
just the exponential trend of how AI is going is like, I really think we're in this like phase change there. And I'm like, I'm really, really, you know, I'm a technologist. I'm an optimist. I'm really excited to see what happens there. And the connection with crypto.
Well, the cool part about that is that I think the better that AI gets, the more it can help all these other verticals and industries, right? Because the better that AI gets, it can complement all these different fields, all the people working on those. It can speed up efficiency, increase security, make things more effective. And I think that's the real benefit of AI is people look at it and say, oh, you know, hey, that's a cool vertical. It can do well. But what I think a lot of people fail to understand is the ripple effect that AI becoming better has on just about everything else that we do to a day-to-day life.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, my team uses AI, and it's just like, it's not like, oh, now we're using AI. It just sort of creeps its way mm-hmm. into all the tools we're already using and just, you know, almost passively it just enhances them and improves productivity.
Yeah, it's. I remember back in high school, one of my teachers or somebody said, like, you know, Google. You know, so many people are scared of Google. Right, it was right when Google was coming out. But like, I think that Google's an augmentation. It's almost making you, you know, cybernetic in a sense. Like, use your intelligence, your natural intelligence, but know how to use Google to increase your intelligence. And she goes, I think one of the hallmarks of a you know, a 4.0 student, you know, 10 years in the future will be who knows how to use Google the best. And I think, you know, looking back, I think it was so completely accurate and so completely right. And I now think that there's probably a whole new host of teachers that are out there like, you know, don't rely on ChatGPT to do your homework, but use it to help you with in a discussion board or a brainstorming session or get your research outline and then go. Whoever could use AI the best, I think, is definitely... you know, definitely going to win out. I do have, actually, I know Brandon, you said one final question. I had one other question that I wanted to ask, but just at a high level, what's the one big learning experience or one big takeaway that you would want to share with the community, from the Maker rebrand to Sky? Would you have, you know, posited anything different? Would you have said, you know, things went smoothly? If they went smoothly, then that's that. If they didn't, what would you have done differently to kind of make it go smooth?
Yeah, so me, I'm a product person, and the metrics I'm always focused on is, are we growing USDS, previously DAI supply? And the answer is yes. And for the Spark side, are the products that we're putting out there being used? And again, the answer is yes. So we see lots of growth having put out the Spark liquidity layer supporting Base. We see more and more, like, the deposits going in there are just going up and to the right. So these are the things I'm focused on. I think the rebrand was very important because the brand of DAI, there's this constant overhead of having to explain what DAI is. And just having US dollar in the name, I think that's a huge win. And so, you know, maybe things are a little bit rough sometimes, but the products are working. Revenue is at all-time highs. I think we're posting like half a billion a year in ARR, and
wow,
the profits are 200 million per year. So the protocol is highly profitable. Yes, the protocol is highly profitable, and the core metrics are going up. So this is the important part.
I love it. Hey, don't. What was the thing that we said? One of our New Year's resolutions was going to be never listen to the FUDsters, right? You know, people just want to FUD and say this and that, but look at the numbers, look at the data, look at the KPIs, track them on chain. I love it. Sam, thank you so much for coming, talking all about Sky, Phoenix Labs, and everything that you're working on. We really do hope to have you come back again later this year. Join us for an online summit, whatever you want. I know there's a lot that you guys are going to be building, and crypto moves fast. So we want to hear from you guys and stay in touch. And yeah, carry on, man. Hope you keep crushing it at the Sky Protocol.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You bet. All right, everybody listening at home, thank you for joining us. We'll see you back same time, same place next week.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel, because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.